I was just getting started. Well, you people are really, really, really funny tonight. Yes, Yudoka? Really, you're really funny tonight. I'm not sure what she's laughing about, but she is really laughing up there. Are you at Stan? You're laughing at Stan? Oh, God is happy when we laugh. God is happy when we sing. God is happy when we're happy. Yeah, sometimes I think he takes a look at us down. He is not a man, guys. God's not a man any more than he's a woman. He's just love energy here, please. You men would like to claim him, but it doesn't work that way. But, you know, he's given us this ability to laugh, and that changes our vibration. Helps us get happier. Why don't we do it more often? I sing in the car mostly when nobody can hear me, when it's just me in the car. But anyhow, what a wonderful family we have, kids. What a wonderful family. And, you know, we don't look for great speakers up here. We're talkers. Talk from my heart. And I've twisted this gentleman's wrist quite a few times because I love to hear him talk. He doesn't mind talking to sailors, and he teaches them. I don't know what he teaches them, but he's teaching those sailors something out there. And I'm not sure what it is because I'm not a sailor, I don't think. But the thing is, this man is very masculine, strong, good family man, a serviceman that's been out there and into the troubles of the world. And he is an absolute bubble of love. And that's our Craig.
You know, tonight, really, ultimately, this, what I'm going to be talking about is co-creating with God. How do we co-create with God? But there's a whole bunch of stuff that needs to take place long before we get there, okay? And it starts with, and I've talked about this a few times before, intuition. My gosh, how on earth do we receive information? How do we do that? You know, now the definition of intuition is that the ability to understand something immediately without the need for conscious reasoning. Now that's in the dictionary. Well, we know there's something not quite complete about that, isn't there? You know, I mean, it's receiving information. You know, that really clearly is what intuition is about, receiving information. Do we understand how this is, how this works? No, we don't really understand that mechanism at all. And believe it or not, as a scientist, we've done everything, and a lot of other scientists I know have done everything we can to try to figure out what that mechanism is. Is there a frequency? Some people theorize it's like a radio. Believe it or not, we're like an antenna, and it's a radio transmission that radiates throughout the universe, and then you pick up these radio waves, like radio waves. But we really can't measure it. So the mystery is largely a mechanism. But what on earth are we getting it from? Where are we getting this information from? Now, as a spiritualist, we really have got a lot of the answer here. I mean, we're getting it from friends and family, and we get a lot of evidence of that during our services and during circles, in Millie's classes, friends, family, guides, even God. Angels will give us messages. And those messages will come in all of the senses that we can imagine, all five of our senses. So, I mean, you can get the information, you can feel it, all five senses. You can see it, you can smell it, you can taste it, in any way you can imagine physically that it will come. It will also come in ideas that will just pop into your head. So it seems like imagination is one of those mechanisms, believe it or not. Sometimes emotions will come rushing in. You know, you're receiving information from that also. Sometimes, believe it or not, you receive messages from outside of time itself, believe it or not. And the reason we know that, believe it or not, is because of a guy by the name of Daryl Bim. He's a professor at Cornell. And he did this wonderful experiment where he was measuring emotionally evoking responses to stimulus, whatever the stimulus happened to be. And as the experiment was set up, he would put young college students in front of a television screen, and they would put a series of pictures, the vast majority of which were rather benign images of flowers and, you know, beautiful landscapes, things like that. But on the odd occasion, inserted randomly, there would be something that would be emotionally evoking, something like a car accident or something like that, that were designed to really get them excited somehow. Well, and it worked, but it worked in a way that they had never quite really seen before. The way he had set up the experiment was that he started the timing of it about 15 seconds prior to the stimulus event actually taking place. Now, for all of us, I mean, we would expect if you saw something that was emotionally evoking, if you saw something that was shocking, something happened that was shocking, understandably, your heart rate, all your physiological factors would hit right then as the event took place, wouldn't it? Isn't that reasonable to think that? And interestingly, every scientist who had ever done this prior to that had sort of mixed results, but that was their expectation also. But Daryl Bim, he set it up 15 seconds prior. And to his great shock and amazement, all of a sudden, he saw that about 6 seconds prior to the emotionally evoking event, in this laboratory setting, heart rate was changing, skin galvanic response was changing, ocular dilation would take place. 6 seconds prior to the event itself. What's going on there? You know? This is so important. I need a couple of volunteers very quickly to explain this. Marilyn, Kim, would you please stand up? Go stand over here, please. Just right here. Just right over here. Marilyn, come on over here. Okay. Now, and for purposes of this demonstration, we're going to have it. It's Kimmy number one and Kimmy number two. Okay, so give me number one. That's right now. Now, I'm going to count 6 seconds. So I'm going to go 1001, 1002, 1003, etc. to six. And Marilyn, give me number two. I would like you to walk in that direction, not too quickly. I want you to walk out of the building while I count down 6 seconds.
Go out the building?
And no, don't go out the building. And when I and stop at 6 seconds, okay?
Okay,
ready? Go. Start walking. 1001, 1002, 1003, 1004, 1005, 1006. Okay. So what was happening? Something would happen to Kimmy number two. Kimmy number two, at that point in time. And Kimmy number one over here, her skin galvanic response was changing. Ocular dilation was changing. Heart rate was changing. That changed over here. It was like, it was as if, the only example would be, you took a pebble and threw it into a pond here. And the emotionally evoking events, the emotions radiated out from that 360 degrees Some of it went into the future, believe it or not, from that point in time. Some of it went into the past. It went into the past, and it came back to Kimmy number one. And Kimmy number one said, I feel weird. Something is wrong. Now, this replicates what happens to any of us during an intuitive event that we either listen to or we don't listen to. And we've all had those moments where we said, either something terrible happened to us, relatively speaking, and I said, I should have listened to my intuition. And I think we've all had that. But there was a lot of times, the vast majority of times, we actually listened to it. And it wouldn't have been a conscious thought, but we listened to it, and it stopped us in our tracks for just a moment. And whatever the emotionally evoking stimulus was, it rushed by and we never noticed it. So we don't have a good sense within our own personal lives that intuition aided us in any way, shape, or form. But it nonetheless happened. Okay? Go ahead and have a seat. Thank you very much. Now, why this would interest me is I was an analyst in the Army at the time. And we were dealing with IEDs and people walking down a path or traveling down a road. Well, let me tell you, if you're traveling 25 miles an hour in a convoy, 6 seconds is a huge distance. That's like 143 feet, as a matter of fact. And what happens if everything is so busy, it's not necessarily, you're going to necessarily feel it. Though, guys in special ops are very good. A lot of infantry guys are very good. And I used to call it the old soldier syndrome. Because they would go, something just doesn't feel right. So they would put on the brake. Now, what that would do is that would stop the emotionally evoking event. Other cases, I thought you could actually hook up sensors to them and then you could cause them to step on the brake quickly enough to where maybe there would be a boom. So there you don't have a causal paradox. But nobody would get killed. Still a scary event. Okay? Still activated. Now, but there are other implications to this. What's going on here? His consciousness is registering this. Now, and I shared this with some of my friends in the Army, and a lot of them got a little bit upset about it, to be honest with you. I said, now you realize what might be going on here. This suggests perfect free will. They said, well, what do you mean about that? I said, now wait a minute. And this guy's walking down the road. God bless him. He walks down the road. This emotionally evoking event does take place. His heart rate does change. Skin galvanic response changes. Ocular dilation changes. A whole host of other information we probably don't have a good understanding of then actually goes to him. And he knows at a profoundly subconscious level that he is about to step on this IED, and indeed he does step on this IED. What's going on there? What is happening? That is a free will choice. Maybe it's done at a much higher level. Maybe it's done at a consciousness height, a God level, where this is where his journey goes in his life. He might not realize it at a conscious level. But at a much higher level, this might very well, I think it probably is a perfect choice. Now, so you see what I mean by free will? See what I mean about choices? They're decision points all along the line. You know, our children do the same thing. Our grandchildren do the same thing. What do we do? How do we interact with our children? Really, God bless them, these little sweethearts. They run around, they do whatever they do. We're in the process of co-creating a life with them. They depend upon us for all the assistance we can get, and they also depend upon us to keep them out of danger. And we do that to the best of our ability. But it's this little soul running along and making free will choices all along. From personal experience, I know what it feels like to pick up a wasp. It doesn't work very well. I remember it vividly, though. Now, but they also have the moments where working with their parent picks them up and brushes them off and says, it's okay. And let's go. Here's the next day. Here's the next process. Here's the next choice. We go toward, okay? So these choices seem to be ubiquitous. They seem to be everywhere around us. Either it's carried on other information, and there also seems to be some sort of a process going on here. And we might be even, and do you think we're expected to make choices in our life? I think so. That's what growing up is all about. It's not just, you know what my daughter told me one time? God bless my little daughter. She was about 4 years old, and she asked me something, whatever it was, and I said, you know what, sweetheart, I really don't know the answer to that. And she said, well, when you grow up, Daddy, you can tell me. It was a process in her mind. Life is a process of growth and learning, really, and it never changes. That's the way it is for all of us. Okay? So we're co-creating. Either we're co-creating with our parents, or we're co-creating, as we've discovered in our meetings here, with our guides, our friends and family who are giving us help. We're co-creating with God even. God gives us information, or miracles happen to take place in our lives that help us co-create this wonderful and amazing life that we can take part in. Co-creating a wonderful and amazing life. Now, how do we do that? How do we do that? You know, as a child, it's really sort of kind of passive. But what happens is when we pray, which is that the human part of us that's co-creating with God, working with God to get something in our life, we sit there and we go, you know, a lot of times we muddle it all up with words. You know that adage, you know, there's a good picture is worth 1,000 words. I think probably what happens is we confuse it. We have it confused in our own minds. We don't use the right language. We don't use the right words. We don't have the right meaning to the words we have. And our own self-doubt then come out in the meanings. And then it's only partial picture. So you can imagine what's going on to our guides and our friends and our family and our angels on the other side who are sitting there going, you know, I'm hearing what this guy's saying. I have no clue what he wants. I just have no clue. Because it is vague. It's imprecise. Well, how do we get beyond that? Maybe in the course of our prayers for healing, and I'm a healer in the church here, maybe we need to change over the way we do things a little bit so that we don't muddle it up with words. Maybe we need some sort of a tool that enables us to very precisely visualize exactly what we want to do and grab a hold of that, and thereby our angels and God can flow all of that healing energy because there is no doubt in their mind of what needs to be done now. So, you know, and I'm a scientist. What's the theory? What's the theory? The theory is I needed to figure out what is that imagery. So a few weeks ago, there's another scientist who was giving classes. His name is Jinang, and he's a PhD in neurobiology. But he's got a good sense of the imagery that you need to have. And so Celeste and I had the opportunity to go to a class up in Thousand Oaks. If God is ubiquitous, in other words, if God is absolutely perfectly everywhere, and I'm Eastern Orthodox Catholic, and we were raised, God is everywhere and fills all things, both visible and invisible. That's a direct quote out of Divine Liturgy. How How could the presence of God not be so perfectly intimate that if we actually said, here we are, this is what I want to do, that he would not respond and answer? He has to answer. He's that loving parent just like we are to our children, which we're replicating a model of God's relationship with us through our children in a perfect world. So how do we do that? How do we do that? Well, Gene has sort of kind of figured out a lot of these things. So Celeste and I went up to this wonderful class, and using physical imagery to facilitate healing, I'm convinced what happens is as you take God's energy, which is freely and perfectly available to absolutely everybody on this planet without exception. Like information is absolutely available to everybody without exception. Everybody in here is a medium. You might not know it, but you are. You're perfect mediums. If you're not getting messages, it's because you just don't believe you're a medium. You open yourself up, you receive information. You're already receiving intuitive information. Okay? Why would you not be receiving healing information? Healing energy from God, you would be, by definition. So, Gene had this wonderful exercise, and I had the opportunity to witness it. Obviously using the energy of God. And he said, what we're going to do is we're going to open up the heart using terms and visualization, his visualization. He brought a volunteer up. He said, I'm going to open up this heart so that perfectly can receive energy and radiate out energy through the heart chakra. If you want to call it that, that's fine. It's the heart God gave you. And he said, and then for all those areas that are not working well or that need perfect healing, instead of saying, God, please help heal this thing, which is very kind of imprecise, he says, you visualize, and this is a gift from God. As a medium, that's what you do. You get an image of something. So you ask what the image is of this item that needs to be healed, of what the issue is within their life. And you see a spinning wheel, and it's spinning one direction. Doesn't really matter what the direction is. I'm just sharing with you how this works. Doesn't matter. But because it needs healing, you know it needs to go the opposite direction. So you stop it, and then you reverse it, and then you maximize it, you increase it, you're making it go the opposite direction. You're bringing healing energy in a visual sense. And this helps God and the angels understand this is exactly what needs to happen. Now, Celeste and I immediately came back and we tested this. We go to our healing circles, we do our prayers, you know, because this is a Christian church, really. So we do our prayers, but I'm telling you, we had unbelievable, unbelievable responses to people who were sitting on our stools over the last couple weeks that felt it in a unique and powerful way. And we've got a friend over in the East Coast. When we say this exercise, when we visualize the healing request appropriately, she has had amazing and profound impacts on her health. She's all the way on the East Coast. So distance has no meaning either. So I'll tell you what. And as everybody who knows my classes, when I talk, everybody gets to practice something. Okay? So what I'd like, we get just a couple minutes here. I'd like to take Celeste, because she has a much prettier voice than I do. We're going to practice this. We're all going to practice this. And I need a volunteer. I need one volunteer to come up here. Christina? Come on, Christina.
Okay. Where
do I stand? No, go ahead and stand over there.
You can just face everybody.
Now, and Christina is going to be the focus of this healing exercise that you are going to perform for her. Okay? Celeste?
So you can close your eyes or leave them open, whatever you feel comfortable with. We always start with a grounding, and I'm just going to talk you through the exercise. It literally takes maybe a minute to 2 minutes. So if you want to slowly take a couple of deep breaths, While doing this, envision roots coming from the bottoms of your feet and going down to connect with the Mother Earth energy. Picture them wrapping around a beautiful amethyst crystal. Feel yourself drawing the purple healing energy from the crystal up to your heart. Now allow the beautiful white healing energy from God and the angels above to flow down through your crown chakra to your heart, where the two healing energies will blend together. Watch this energy pour out from your heart and envelop you and Christina into a bubble of healing energy together. Now envision Christina's heart chakra spinning in a strong clockwise direction, allowing her to be grounded, relaxed, and open and receptive to the healing energy. We now ask God and the angel kingdom to show us the spin that is causing any negativity or dis-ease to Christina. Now stop and reverse this spin direction. Spin it to its maximum velocity. Hold it at that velocity. And release. And we thank God in the angel kingdom. And it's as simple as that.
That's just how simple it is. Now, how do you feel?
Well, there was definitely lots of chills. And my energy colors changed. I went from like a red to a yellow and to a white. So,
Now, the impact of this can take place up to 30 minutes of time later. It doesn't have to happen instantaneously. It can. And several of our friends have reported felt it immediately. But this can also take place up to 30 minutes later over time. Okay?
So, are your shoulders following you?
Probably just stress.
Okay.
That's what I was
thinking. Okay. So, I want to thank you all. It's always about healing. It's about being open to new information, being open to how we put that information together and how we co-create our lives with God, which also means how do we co-create the quality of our life with God. And that's why healing is absolutely available to all of us. And I want to thank you so much for coming this evening.